I call this meeting of Labor and Industry and Finance to order. Our first order of business is to approve the minutes from April 4th. Representative Schultz, have you had a moment to look over the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having reviewed the minutes, I have not seen anything objectionable in the minutes, and thus I move their approval.
Fantastic. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Chair Nelson, if you'd like to proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is both these bills that will be up today are come from the administration. I'll move House File 5217 to be laid over for possible inclusion. And one of these bills was going to be our finance vehicle bill, but so House File 5217 is just basically tweaks to the Bureau of Mediation Services, the first piece is training officers, grievance arbitration is that the BMS will pay the cost, BMS appropriations are modified a little bit, and then there's a repeal in there, and I have with me someone here to help explain the bill more in depth or answer questions.
And there's an A1 author's amendment?
Yes, right.
Would you like to move that amendment?
I will move the A1 amendment. And that just basically is in the appropriation part from last year, just changes them a little bit, doesn't add any money or take any money away. And it's just a technical amendment.
All those in favor of adopting the A1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Nelson, to your bill.
And I said I have here somebody from the BMS, and he can explain the bill in more depth.
Thank you. Please say your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Johnny Villarreal, I'm the Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services. The proposal in front of you is a budget neutral proposal to essentially roll identified funds into the BMS operational budget. The purpose is to essentially eliminate the administrative burden of tracking each staff member's time for the related tasks. With regards to the Peace Officer Grievance Arbitration roster, that is a roster that the Bureau facilitates under 626.892, and those arbitrators by law are prohibited from participating in any other type of labor arbitration. And so given that aspect that they've dedicated their arbitration practice to this roster only, we think it's only fitting that the Bureau pay for the training that's required under the statute. Then under the Labor Management Committee grants, those funds, we saw a significant decrease in access to those funds through 2017 when only 6% of the funds were accessed. Since then, the Bureau has put significant time and effort into upgrading our Labor Management Committee trainings, and we are required to do that under 179A.04 sub 3. And so we are looking to essentially just roll those funds into our operational budget. Just for context, in FY20, we only had 10 Labor Management Committee requests. And since then, and since the upgrade in FY23, we had 43, which was a fourfold increase in our requests for Labor Management Committee training and facilitation. So with that, pending any questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Discussion to the bill. All right, Chair Nelson, any further comments?
Again, this is just a housekeeping bill from the Bureau of Mediation Services, and with that, I will renew my motion that House File 5217, as amended, be laid over for possible future consideration.
Thank you. Next bill on the agenda, House File 5224, also from Representative Nelson. Oh, just kidding.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm new here. Well, okay, but I'm not giving her the
they do. Different committees do it differently, but yeah.
So now, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now the next bill on the agenda is House File 5224, also from Chair Nelson. Would you like to move your bill?
I'll move House File 5224 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Please explain your bill.
Again, this is our housekeeping changes to the Bureau Office of Combatants. I get my words here straight. Regulations in the labor Department of Labor and Industry. And with me, I have a testifier to explain the bill. Madam Chair.
Thank you. I believe you have a testifier.
Yep.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Berg and members of the committee. My name is Kate Peruschek, and I am Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Labor and Industry. Pleased to be here with you today to testify on behalf of the Department's Supplemental Budget Bill, House File 5224. This bill includes changes that modify the Contract Recovery Fund and Office of Combative Sports statutes. The first will result in an increase in expenditures out of the Contract Recovery Fund, and the second is budget neutral to the general fund. The Contract Recovery Fund, which is funded by a fee on residential building contractor licenses, compensates owners or lessees of residential property in Minnesota who have suffered an actual and direct out-of-pocket loss due to a licensed contractor's fraudulent, deceptive, or dishonest practices. The proposal before you today enhances the effectiveness of the Contract Recovery Fund by increasing the amount of funds available to compensate homeowners who have suffered a financial loss. The maximum amount a homeowner can receive from the Contractor Recovery Fund per application is currently $75,000. This proposal would increase the maximum amount a homeowner can receive to $100,000. Increasing the maximum payout will allow homeowners to recover more of their out-of-pocket loss when a licensee fails to perform their contractual obligation. DLI projects that this change will result in an additional $228,000 being paid out of the Contractor Recovery Fund each year. The Contractor Recovery Fund carries a balance of $9.4 million, and the projected increased expenditures from this change are not expected to negatively impact the health of the fund. The combative sports changes in House File 5224 include technical fixes to the law that passed last year, such as adding rule sets for Muay Thai, allowing alternative rule sets for kickboxing, and clarifying that while youth events aren't regulated by the Office of Combative Sports, they must be regulated by a third party. In addition, proposed changes add basic experience requirements for individuals looking to be licensed as a combatant. These requirements will ensure that the Office of Combative Sports is licensing individuals who have been properly trained to safely compete at both the amateur and professional level. The bill amends the event fee calculation to accommodate promoters who pay a flat venue fee but who do not sell any tickets. This budget-neutral change in the fee schedule will ensure that promoters are all paying the same amount based on the percentage of revenue they make, either through the sale of tickets or through flat-rate contractual agreements. Finally, the bill allows the Office of Combative Sports to share a combatant's medical information with the physician conducting pre-bout exams and the ringside physician if needed to better protect the health of the combatant. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner.
And Madam Chair, I think there's an amendment here. I believe that is from Representative McDonald.
Correct. So the A1 amendment from Representative McDonald, would you care to move and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'll move the A1 amendment and explain the amendment. It's a simple amendment, page 7, line 4. After the comma, insert, and the combatant has provided prior authorization. And perhaps it's not necessary, but I'll let the commissioner verify. But our concern was, and the reason this was drafted, is that we believe that through HIPAA laws that the combatant should probably have permission to give to the coaches his or her health medical records before disclosing that from one coach to the other.
Is that a question?
It's both a question and an explanation of the amendment. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. Deputy Commissioner.
Thanks, Representative McDonald, for the question. Yes, we do require and would require prior authorization before sharing medical information. So it would be that there's a data practices notice on the application for licensure that indicates that certain data may be disclosed. And if this bill were to pass, we would even more explicitly state that that would include medical information collected as part of that application.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, so Commissioner, this amendment, your expert opinion is not necessary.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, that would be correct, yes.
Madam Chair, then I will withdraw the A1 amendment.
Okay. All right. Well, with that withdrawn, discussion to the bill. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Berg. This question's for the testifier. You had talked about it was $9.1 million in that general contractors recovery fund. I'm wondering, is that those funds are available both for homeowners? Is that also the fund that they use for wage theft?
Deputy Commissioner.
So it's thank you, Madam Chair. That fund is explicitly to compensate homeowners who have suffered a financial loss at the hands of a licensed residential building contractor and does not pertain to wage theft, if I'm understanding the question correctly.
Okay. Yep, that's the only question I had. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Lead McDonald.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, regarding that same topic on that increasing it from $75,000 to $100,000, what if the contractor or the subcontractor is not licensed and there still is a mistake? Does that homeowner have the opportunity still to collect from that contractor's recovery fund?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, unfortunately, no. The contractor fund is only available to homeowners who have used a licensed residential contractor.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So then also, if there is an issue and the homeowner is subject to some payment from the contractor recovery fund, can that homeowner also, under the law or this change, sue the contractor for the mistake or error that was made in the home building?
Deputy Commissioner.
Representative McDonald, Madam Chair. So the process is they actually, in order to access the contractor recovery fund, they have to obtain a judgment. So they have to obtain a final judgment, which is the result of filing a successful lawsuit or filing a settlement agreement, and then they have to document their judgment in district court and makes the judgment a legally collectible document. So then, if DLI approves the payment, the homeowner assigns its rights to the portion of judgment that DLI has agreed to compensate the homeowner, and then if the approved payouts exceed the amount available for payments, DLI prorates the amount.
Anything further?
Madam Chair, no, I don't think so. There was a case in my district that a homeowner had issues with mold and sickness and allergies and was working very hard to get the contractor to pay and or recover some funds from this very fund. And I think they were eventually successful, but it was many years and an arduous process for them. Not necessarily anything against Dolly, but it was very tough for them. She met with me often for 2 or 3 years in district regarding this issue. And I think eventually they did receive some funds from that recovery fund, but it was a tough go for them to get that in the first place. So I just wanted to hear a little bit more about that. So thank you.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, Chair Nelson.
I'll renew my motion. Madam Chair, that's House File 4224 be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right, Chair Nelson, with nothing further.
Madam
on
Chair?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to ask a question maybe of Representative Hansen to just kind of get an outlay for us. Towards this stage of the legislative session last year, we had a bill before us in regards to Uber and Lyft, and I wanted to hear if we were going to be hearing a bill to maybe preempt some decisions happening in Minneapolis that could really detrimentally impact the ride-sharing opportunities available here in the Twin Cities, and if we were expecting to see a bill in that regard in this committee.
Sorry that I missed your question, Representative Schultz. Chair Nelson.
Madam Chair and Representative Schultz, it's my understanding that bill is working its way through the system and that we will be the final stop for that before it goes to the floor. I've been asking that same question all during session of where the bill's at, when are we going to see it, and we're waiting patiently to hear it. So it will end up in our committee, and we will, again, my understanding is it will be the final stop before it goes to the House floor.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your response to it, and it sounds like you have great interest in making sure that we get this resolved appropriately. So we obviously are under some time constraints, and I'm concerned about what I'm reading, hearing about, and a great concern for the metro communities and their tourism economy, because I've heard that major conferences are making decisions to move to other major cities around the country because of the uncertainty that exists right now. So this appears to be a very pressing issue at this time.
All right, thank you. With no further business before us, we're adjourned. Wow.